Hello and welcome to the Wednesday, January 30th, 2013 edition of the Sands and its Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm today recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Rapid 7 did one of its famous inner-wide vulnerability scans, this time for Universal Plug and Play. Rapid 7, of course, is the company behind Metasploit. They have done these scans in the past. This time they focused on Universal Plug and Play because this is a service that's frequently enabled on internet gateways. First of all, what's the big deal with Universal Plug and Play? Well, Universal Plug and Play is supposed to be a protocol that allows devices within your network to configure the firewall. For example, IP-based cameras support this feature a lot, and if you have a camera that has a built-in web server to allow you access to the images and enable this feature, then this camera is able to reconfigure your firewall to allow external access to the camera. So it's really meant for home users that aren't really that familiar with NAT rules and port forwarding to take all of the details out of configuring a firewall to make this web camera externally accessible. So really the protocol is meant for home networks and sort of for use inside that network. Still not the greatest protocol, but should never be exposed to the outside. The sad part with respect to the mitigation is that in many cases it may actually be out of your control if this is an ISP supplied gateway or a device like this, then you may not have a choice but to accept the configuration the device came with. If you want to take a look at the traffic, it's a UDP port 1900. Internally, you should see these SSDP requests, usually msearch, sort of a standard beacon that you will see, for example, in Wireshark. Well, and while we're talking about security cameras, an interesting blog post here about digital video recorders and how insecure they are. In particular, one manufacturer that makes a lot of these digital video recorders that are used in security systems under various brands. You may have seen them. They all sort of look the same because, well, they all essentially have the same hardware inside, but also the same firmware. And then, like so often with these embedded firmwares and web servers that are embedded in systems like this, they're out of date, they're vulnerable, and they're not properly secured. So the blog post describes how this particular individual went about figuring out what these DVRs are about. He managed actually to connect a serial port to it by opening the DVR, and then he learned more about the DVR that then allowed him to actually write a script to remotely exploit these DVRs. At the very least, you want to set up these DVRs on an off port so they're not so easily found by search engines like Shodan and such. And then, if at all possible, firewall them off and make sure only certain IP addresses that actually need to have external access do have external access. Maybe make them accessible via VPN or so if you do need to expose them to the internet at large for remote monitoring. And then remember, a couple of weeks ago, we had two flaws in Ruby on Rails, a JSON parser flaw that wasn't really all that severe, and an XML parser flaw that led to SQL injection. Well, we got a new flaw in Ruby on Rails. This time, it's again the JSON parser, but it appears to be quite a bit more severe. According to the announcement that was sent by Michael Kociarski, who is the researcher who discovered this, this particular vulnerability can be used to inject arbitrary code and to inject arbitrary SQL. So you do have a SQL and code injection attack that's possible due to this particular problem in Ruby on Rails JSON parser. The issue here appears to be that it is possible to actually inject a YAML instead of JSON and have that run through the YAML parser. There's a quick workaround for this. Ruby on Rails actually provides two different backends to parse JSON, and the JSON gem backend is not vulnerable, so you could switch backends in your application initializer. And then in closing, I just want to thank to everybody who filled out the survey. I'm going to make some changes, in particular to the back end of the podcast, to respond to some of the issues that you brought up. I already added a couple more ID tags, for example, to the MP3 files. Also, the RSS feed, I'll try to add some of the show notes to them. Still have to figure out how to do that best and stay compatible. In case you have any issues with the podcast next couple days, please let me know. And well, that's it for today. So thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.